Today is May 5th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
A little late on the punch board because I forgot that I had one. We've got a great show this week. We're going to start out with treatise number two from Steve Jobs, an open letter to the world about just how environmentally friendly Apple really is. Then we're going to do a product roundup on this new podcast recording tool. We're using it right now. And that's why things might be a little weird on this show. But the application looks awesome. We're really psyched to talk about it. And that'll be in the product roundup. Jeff, kick us off with the news.
Okay, Apple, via another public letter from Steve Jobs, has responded to the recent criticisms of Greenpeace. They've changed Apple's policy and described where Apple stands with respect to toxic chemicals in the manufacturing process and recycling of waste.
I was surprised to learn, Steve Jobs wrote, that in many cases Apple is ahead of, or will soon be ahead of, most of its competitors in these areas. Whatever other improvements we need to make, it is certainly clear that we have failed to communicate the things that we're doing well.
And the letter specifically addressed the use of toxic chemicals in their products and argued that Apple is ahead of most vendors in the practice. The letter argues that Apple will be recycling significantly more than either Dell or HP as a percentage of past sales waste, and they'll be doing that by the year 2010. And finally, Apple committed to providing an annual report from now on of their efforts and accomplishments in this regard.
In response to the letter, Greenpeace raised its environmental rating for Apple from 2.7 to 5. This is on a scale of 10. And they issued a positive statement in support of Apple's plans. The letter, of course, from Apple merely explained what Apple has already done. It is not an announcement of any recent environmental achievements. So it seems that a simple status report along with some promises for future actions was enough to nearly double the Mac and iPod makers' ranking with Greenpeace. Greenpeace is still looking for Apple to implement worldwide recycling programs. Currently, the program is just in the U.S. and to ship non-toxic products. Presumably, this means looking, for example, for alternate battery technology, which is, shall we say, non-trivial. Greenpeace's rating for Apple is still below that of HP and Dell. So let's get right into the context machine on this subject. I was really surprised to see this come out. It's kind of a non sequitur from what you normally expect Apple to talk about. Let's just start, Jeff. What was your reaction when you saw this come out? What did you think about it?
Well, my first reaction was, what the hell is going on? This is the second open letter from Steve Jobs in about a month and a half or so. That was the biggest shock to me. And then when I saw what they were talking about, I was thinking, wow, there's some stuff going on behind the scenes at Apple that I would just love to be privy to, because this has not been the norm for Apple forever. And then all of a sudden we have these two open letters from the CEO in a very short time frame.
Now, Apple, in the process of doing all of this, lists all of these things that they are doing or that they've been doing or that they're going to do. First question, let's look specifically at the content of the letter. Should we be impressed with what they're listing as the stuff that they've done, the stuff that they're going to do?
Well, sure, because they actually have a nice list of environmental policies that they laid out in the letter. One of the things I found interesting about the letter, though, was that for the most part, they didn't reveal anything that we didn't already know. They just put it all in one nice little succinct letter with a quick link from the Apple homepage on their website. And that, you know, that was it. It was just a nice little packaged presentation for everyone, as opposed to a whole new set of policies that they were rolling out, and Apple didn't change what they're doing. They just made it more clear to everyone else what they're doing.
Now, in fairness, we did not know some things about the roadmap when they said, oh, we have targets to, for example, get rid of, I'm going to forget what it was, but it was one of the toxic chemicals, not mercury, but something else, by 2008. You know, they said we're going to, they laid out some targets for what they're planning to do. The fact that they plan to use, and we'll talk about this in a second, new display technology that's coming down the pike. Which might have been easy to guess if you know the past stuff well, but they've never mentioned that publicly before.
Okay, yeah, that is absolutely true. So the thing with displays, what they're doing is switching from using LCD displays that use the current technology, which is a fluorescent tube for the backlighting, and that's going to switch to LED. And when they switch to the light-emitting diodes, what they're going to be doing is eliminating mercury from the displays because there's a small amount of mercury that goes into a fluorescent tube.
And while we're on the subject, it's kind of a cool technology. I think some of the listeners of the show are probably already aware of it. This is something that existed or has existed for a while, and people have known is coming down the pike. And everyone has said, oh, LED backlights are going to be great because they use less energy. They're going to make the batteries in laptops last longer. It's going to be a huge win. And so people were already very excited about it, and everyone pretty much expected that the entire industry would transition from the fluorescent backlights to the LEDs. But again, it's just a new statement to have Apple come out and say, hey, we're going to use this technology when it becomes available.
Yeah, and that in itself was kind of a surprise because Apple is notorious for not telling us what they're going to be doing with future products. And in this case, they came right out and said, look, this is where we're going, which confirmed industry rumors that have been floating around for quite a while now.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the other comments that they make. Specifically, there's this comment about percentage of past sales weight. They say, as a percentage of our past sales weight, the amount of pounds of product that we've shipped, we're going to be recycling a higher percentage of that than other firms like Dell or HP. Simple comment here. One of the thoughts that springs to mind is that Dell and HP have shipped a lot more product in the past 10 or 15 years than Apple has. They simply have more stuff that they sell. They have sold more product to more people. They have more stuff around the world. Is that really a fair metric to compare Apple to other companies?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question. And there's a problem behind the metrics that they're using, which is that there is no standard for rating the or tracking and measuring the amount of recycled product that any company is bringing back in. There are no standards. So I guess, at least for now, this is as good as anything else, because if you look at it based on physical units that go out and then come back as recycled product, there's no way Apple could ever compete with a company like Dell, at least right now, because Dell ships so many more computers than Apple does. Now, if you look at it from the iPod side of things, well, okay, maybe from the music player standpoint, Apple could show that they're bringing in far more units than anyone else because they're the leader in that game.
But then, of course, there's this question about an iPod is much easier to recycle than a computer or a display, a big
right.
display. And no matter what, it's going to benefit someone. One of the things that's interesting to me is Steve Jobs says that this is the metric that Dell uses, percent past sales weight, which works in Apple's favor because they have fewer pounds of product out there in the marketplace now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess if they're going to play by Dell's game, okay, great. The numbers work in Apple's favor.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the motivation for this. Why did this letter come out? There are two reasons that I can think of, and one of them we talked about with the last open letter about music. The first one is to protect its brand, right?
Right.
And I mean, there's this issue, we talked about this a lot with music, that that they want to be perceived as part of the solution, not part of the problem. Is there anything else, any other brand stuff going on here, or is it really just that simple?
I don't think anything, especially at this level, is that simple. But I think that brand protection and public perception is a big part of what's going on here. I think that Greenpeace wants you to believe that they are completely responsible for Apple's change. And I think that they are minimally responsible. I think this has a lot more to do with the fact that shareholders were planning on having a vote about forcing Apple to do certain things with recycling and environmental issues related to their products. This vote was coming up in about a week, I believe. And so I think this was a very well orchestrated preemptive strike, which allows Apple to maintain control over how their environmental program works. And it allows them to keep from having to succumb completely to what the shareholders are going to want them to do. So, you know, this sounds like it takes the
wind out of the sails of this movement among some of the shareholders.
Absolutely. And I think that has a lot more to do with this open letter coming out than anything else.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the rhetoric versus what Apple has actually been doing. John Martellaro, who wrote the story that covered this letter, one of the things he pointed out was that Apple's rating with Greenpeace doubled overnight, and all they did was put out a letter that said, hey, this is the stuff we're doing. So the simple act of disclosing their plans, in Greenpeace's estimation, rose their rating a great deal. How much is that? And there's a general sense, I think, among the readership at TMO and presumably among our listeners about a general sense of disdain for that simple change. Hey, all they did was talk about it. Now all of a sudden, Greenpeace thinks they're the bee's knees. Do you agree with that?
Well, if you go and read the follow-up article I wrote to John's article about Apple's open letter, my article covers specifically Greenpeace's response. And in that letter, or in that article that I wrote, I specifically state that I felt that this was more about rhetoric than action, and Greenpeace appears to be more interested in hearing what people have to say and promises that they're making, or in some cases promises that they promise to make a promise, than about the actual action.
All right. And I mean, the thing is, and of course, these articles are all in the show notes, both the original announcement and Greenpeace's response. One of the things that's interesting to me is that there is one of Greenpeace's aims, presumably, is to get people motivated about environmental protection, about reducing toxic chemicals in product and so forth. So it seems like it's very much part of Greenpeace's aim just to get companies to talk about this stuff publicly. So I can see how it would be, how it's reasonable for Greenpeace to get up and say, hey, now you guys are talking about it. You're making this stuff public. You're making it clear that you want to lead in this stuff. And that in and of itself lends credence to environmental protection as performed by big commercial enterprises in the U.S. Is that, given that it is, this change clearly is about rhetoric, is it reasonable that they're so focused on rhetoric?
You know, that's a tough one, because without the rhetoric, people don't have anything really to use to conceptualize where these companies are going. Yes, you have the actions that companies are taking today, but without the talk that goes along with all of this, you don't have an easy way to be able to visualize where these companies are going in the future. So in that sense, it's important. However, I think in the grand scheme of things, the actual actions that a company takes far outweigh the words that they give to you. And if you go and you look at the European set of standards, the RoHS, I'm stammering because I can't remember what the acronym means. It's the Hazardous Substance Restriction of Hazardous Substance Directive. There we go.
Oh, nice work.
Call. Dang, I remembered it. Okay, so that's a set of voluntary standards that the European Union came up with that says, here are the chemicals that go into certain electronic devices that shouldn't be there anymore. Now, it's up to companies to voluntarily comply with this, although different member states in the EU will be enacting laws about how they will enforce this. Apple was completely in compliance with every part of the RoHS standard before it went into effect in early 2003. Many other electronics manufacturers still are not in compliance with this. And of course, it is still a voluntary thing. But the point is, Apple was way ahead of the game on this, and that should have played had a much more... I have to re-say that sentence because it so came out backwards. That should have had a much greater impact on Apple's overall perception as an industry leader in environmental awareness and protection than merely the words that go along with that.
But as you were saying before, in fairness, we wouldn't be standing here talking about their compliance with RoHS if they hadn't published this letter and said, hey, we were doing that before 2003.
Right. And actually, the information that they were doing it before the RoHS thing went into effect, that's been available on Apple's website for a long time.
All right. So do your research, people. That's what we're saying.
So now, to get a little bit more perspective on Greenpeace's view on how all these numbers fit together, Vern Seward did a really great follow-up column where he actually contacted some people at Greenpeace and spoke with them about the process that they went through to come up with these numbers and got some information about how Apple was able to go from 2.7 to 5. So that's a nice read also.
Yeah. So get some of the details on their internals, and that'll have to be the last word for the Context Machine. If you have thoughts, questions, comments, of course, as always, you can send us thoughts to roundup@macobserver.com, and let's move into the product roundup.
I think that sounds like a great idea. And this week, we're going to be talking
Actually, you know what, Jeff? I'm going to stop you because we got to back up. I had the wrong thing selected. How am I supposed to know? This is a whole new, it's a totally new setup. It's so much sweeter when I do it this way. Hey, people, check it out. If you have thoughts or questions, comments about the news, send us them at roundup@macobserver.com. So much cooler that way, right?
You know, that actually was really cool. And for those of you playing at home, I never hear the riffs that go between each section. I just wait, and then Ricky drops them in later. Except for today, I feel like I'm more part of the team today because I can actually hear all of that.
And that's what we're talking about for the rest of the show.
That's right. So today we're talking about a wonderfully fun new product. It's an application. It's called Ubercaster, and its sole purpose in life is to help you design, create, and publish your podcasts.
So we're in the product roundup now. Let's talk about Ubercaster. So this thing came out. We ran a story. It's $80. It came out just a week or two ago. And it's made by a company called Pleasant Software for the People. Which is a
I like that
term.
Name.
I love that name. Yeah. Do you want to give us the rundown, Jeff, for what it does?
Okay, here's our nickel rundown, or depending on how the economics are in your area, the 10-cent rundown. It's a standalone application, And what it does is it manages all the different input sources that you would have for a podcast. So in this case, it's managing Ricky's input from his microphone at his computer. It's managing my input, which is coming through Skype into his computer. It's managing all of the nice bass licks that you hear between each section in the podcast. And then it also allows us to take all of that content once we have it recorded, package it up nicely, and present it as a podcast to everyone without having to use additional programs.
Yeah, so to give you some context here, the way I did this show before, go to the show notes. This is actually really funny. The last link in the show notes for the articles is the setup that we have been using for the last 8 or 10 months to do this show. And there are four applications that Ubercaster is replacing for me. Audio Hijack Pro, which I use to do all the routing behind the scenes to get my microphone and Jeff and everything else all into the recording application. Logic Pro, which I use to record, and that's because of my own personal prejudices about recording software, and I use Logic for other things as well. iTunes, which I used to edit the information, the track information at the end, and to set file names and to attach the little postage stamp image that you see that goes with the show. And Transmit, which was the FTP client that I've been using to load everything up to the CacheFly servers. Ubercaster replaces all four of those applications, and it does each of the things pretty much as well. There are little quibbles here and there, and we'll talk about some of this stuff. But the other thing that it lets me do is it gives you a punch board. So I can just hit a little button. And it just happens. And Jeff can hear it.
Which is nice, because previously, when we'd hit the end of a section, I would stop. In my little head, I would count to five, and then I would start talking again.
Which is lame. It's totally lame.
Yeah, and now I can tell exactly when I'm supposed to start talking. And apparently, I didn't realize there was a place that even though I wasn't talking, there was a lick going in, and I just learned that today. How about that?
Lovely. Let's talk a little bit about it. Oh, and the other thing about the punch board is that you can assign keys to each of these things. So if you have, for example, audio comments, I'm going to sit down at some point and talk to Dave Hamilton at the Mac Geek Gab and see if he's interested in using this as well, because they do a lot of audio comments stuff. And he's got to run that stuff out of iTunes. This is perfect if you have little audio clips that you want to drop in. You can set the start and end points and stuff like that. So that's all very cool. I'm a big fan of the punch board. A couple of other things to point out. Let's see. So we talked recording. Oh, it lets you do the chapter editing. If you're doing enhanced podcasts, you can do that stuff. You can set the ID3 tags. You can use templates, of course. So I have a template set up with all the bass licks and everything else. And so I just open it up and can start recording.
Okay, now the template thing, That's really cool for another reason. And that's because you were able to actually email me the template. And then when I opened it up, I had the full punch board with all the licks and everything just in this nice little package. I didn't have to set anything up. Ricky was able to send it to me so I could do some other playing around with Ubercaster. Very nice.
Yeah. And that was great for debugging it. We're going to talk about that in a second. And it's also great because Jeff is actually going to be recording the show starting in a month or so, and we'll talk about that later. Surprise coming up. But that's for another week.
That's called a teaser.
That's right. Obviously, it lets you export files as well. And then it's wicked cool that it lets you do this. You can put in FTP server information, and it'll encode it and automatically upload it to those servers. And so that's great. I mean, there were three Automator workflows that I had to get the things that I used from what Logic exported onto our servers. And in between, I had to do things like put the picture in and all this other silly stuff that is now taken care of, which is awesome.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah.
But we did have some problems, didn't we?
Yes, we did. The biggest one Jeff, you might want to describe how we ran into this problem.
Oh my God. The biggest problem from my perspective was this horrible echo I would get, which was delayed as well. So everything that I would say was being played back to me about half a second or a second after I said it. So I'm sitting here talking and I'm having to listen to myself talk at the same time. And for everyone that listens every week, I feel your pain having to listen to me. Oh my God. But the horrible part about that is that once you hear yourself start talking and there's that delay, now you're focusing on what you just said. And then you kind of start talking sort of slow and almost
You want your echoed self to catch up with you, and so you start talking slower, and then you get really confused. It's bad.
Right, and it sounds like you have a brain injury or something, and it was really bad. It was horribly distracting, and it was enough of a problem that even though we had wanted to try using Ubercaster to record one of our shows earlier, we couldn't. It was, at the time, a showstopper.
So we spent a little bit of time on this. We got together earlier this week and tried to hammer it out and went through and debugged some stuff. We fixed the problem. We're doing it now, and we're doing it without any special hack. We're using the Skype 2.6 beta, the most recent beta, and now, of course, we're going to be very anxious about trying to update Skype. But
yes.
And it only matters, as far as I can tell. I forget, Jeff, if both of us did the update. I think I just did it, and you were using 2.1 or 2.0. But I think when just I, the recording end, the recording person, updates to that beta, then the problem seems to go away. For us, again, sorry, Jeff, you should go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I was going to say, I don't remember anymore which one of us updated first. I believe it was you, and so I believe you're correct. When I was still using version 2.0.0.6, and you had updated to the 2.6 beta, the echo went away, although we are now both using the 2.6 beta.
Yeah, and we actually swapped and checked that it solved the problem. We tried it in the reverse order, and I had the echo, and then Jeff updated his version of Skype trying to record at his end, and then the echo went away. So we're in touch with the folks at Pleasant Software about this, and they know about it. They know it's an issue. It only shows up on some machines, and hopefully they'll get this licked. Or maybe it'll turn out that it's a Skype-based problem. We're not sure, but we're psyched that we can use it now. A couple of other things to keep in mind as we're going. If you do a podcast and look into this application, there are some latency issues. I'm on a really fast machine, and even now I have it set to let me hear myself when I talk, and there's enough latency that it's a little distracting. So if you're on an older machine, that may be an issue. They also have a mic enhancer similar to what they have in GarageBand, and that will also increase the latency a lot. So I'd probably stay away from that. It doesn't make, this was something we ran into at the beginning, it doesn't make level checking really easy. It's not necessarily easy when you're first looking at it, when you're first setting up the podcast, to tell, you know, is the bass going to be way louder than everybody else? By the way, I apologize if that's what happens. Is Jeff much louder than I am? They don't offer necessarily a good mixing interface to check that, and a really easy way to manage it. And anything else we had?
Those were the big things. What it comes down to is this is a very, very cool application. It's hopefully going to totally streamline our podcasting workflow. And there's just a few minor little things that need to be worked out. And this is going to be a killer application for us.
Yeah, it is. And if you're interested in it, head over to ubercaster.com and take a look at it. They've got a great forum system there. Their developers are involved. They're working on updates. They've already released one update along the way. And so we're really psyched about this, and we think it's going to really change the way we do what we do. So, yeah, we're psyched about it. Let us know what you think, of course. Roundup at MacObserver.com. Ubercaster.
And And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
It's just so cool.
That rocked.
Our content is written by the folks at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. That's all I've got.
And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online. Ubercaster is awesome.
That totally fracking rocks.